If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, folks, welcome to Planet Porky, the latest, greatest podcast that you can put your hands on and tune your ears into. This is Engineering for Your Ears, folks. I'm delighted to say, once again in the studio with me today, the wonderful, in fact, the irreplaceable Leslie Ann Jones. Leslie Ann, great to have you back in the studio with me today. What fantastic responses we've been getting to the previous two podcasts. Your marriage proposal aside, you've had some pretty good feedback, haven't you?
It's been quite overwhelming, actually. I'm very grateful to all those who take the trouble to get in touch and tell us what they think.
Yeah, good people.
Good people. Yeah. We have a very good family going on.
Yes, well, that's great. I'm glad to hear that. Now, one thing we haven't sort of got onto in the last couple of podcasts, because we did a hell of a lot of it, you know, prior to that, but the situation regarding Harry and Meghan, of course, still going on. But it's now spread, hasn't it? The story that we haven't really touched upon, and it's still bubbling under, are the way that the royal family use their names to promote things like milk in Japan. Are you having me on? You know, Peter, the son of Princess Anne, and Foggy, what was his name? Mark Phillips.
Mark Phillips. Mark Phillips was the dad,
her first husband, you know, is now flogging milk in Japan with a picture of a palace behind him. Everybody thinks it, in Japan it's Buckingham Palace. It's not. It's where old Churchill was born, you know, what's that called? You know what I'm talking about?
Is,
you know, owned by the Marquis of Blandford, you know.
Yeah,
used to be a mad coke fiend, didn't he? But he's recovered and retired now. But anyway, you know what I'm talking about. And, you know, this is going to give a lot of Republicans in this country a lot of ammunition to say, why on earth do we allow this to go on?
There is much more of this to come, because we had Princess Pushy, didn't we? She having some treatment in South Africa, I think.
Yeah.
And she's sworn blind that she has paid for it, and that she hasn't
made her younger, apparently.
Yeah, that she hasn't been remunerated for it.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah.
I thought it was fascinating that Harry and Meghan walked away with their tails between their legs, with nothing of the deal that they put on the table in front of Her Majesty, as if one does that. Whoever you are.
Yes.
But they've had to recede with literally nothing of what they were proposing.
Yeah.
So what happens now? What happens is that they attract more global media than ever before.
Yes.
For about 5 minutes.
Yes.
And then I read somebody very interestingly in one of the papers said, within months, Harry becomes the guy in the corner at the party people point out as that chap who used to be in the royal family. It's going nowhere for them.
Meghan's fella, that's what he'll be. He won't be the Duke of Sussex anymore. But, that's Meghan's fella. But
it's heartbreaking, the whole thing.
The marriage will end, won't it?
I hope not.
The marriage will end.
For the sake of that little baby, I hope not.
Listen, she entered the royal family and thought, God, I'm not having this. What's all this about me having to walk behind Catherine? What's all this about me being way down the pecking order? I'm already a star in Hollywood. I came to this family to make them brighter and better because I'm more famous, and now they want to hide me in the closet. She doesn't understand the pecking order in the royal family.
She doesn't. Who didn't sit down and explain that to her?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, who didn't tell her this is what you're marrying into? Yeah. An ancient institution that works this way.
Yes.
For better or worse, we don't judge. Yeah. It works this way, and it has done for more than 1,000 years.
That's right.
And I was giving her the benefit of the doubt to begin with, but now I think she's gone too far.
It'll end, honestly. The marriage will end. I know that for a fact, because what he's done, look, she came to the royal family, had a look at it, said, I don't want this, and got out. But she's come out with an enormous enhanced popularity, no, not popularity, enhanced fame, hasn't she?
Reputation.
Reputation and fame. She's come out of it enhanced.
We
like her less, I agree. And there's nothing racist enough, by the way.
And we did embrace her hugely.
Of course we embraced her.
We were all behind
her. We spent £35 million on her wedding.
And he was our favourite royal.
What Harry's done is awfully more dangerous because he's stepped out of the royal family into her world, right? He won't be accepted in her world the way she was accepted in his world because of the way the royal family embraces those within it. All the Queen's leaving speeches were about love and respect and affection for my grandson.
Magnificent job she did as
Magnificent
well.
Magnificent job. I thought. But he's now going to go into Hollywood and he's just become a vehicle for Meghan to improve her fame.
What has he got to offer? I mean, they're launching a production company. Yeah. He reckons he's going to do voiceovers.
Yeah.
You listen to him giving
a
speech.
Exactly.
He sounds like, you know, some yob from halfway down the estuary.
Or like Hugh Bonneville. Acting like Hugh Bonneville, honestly.
Kind of a cross between. But you know, what can Harry, with no acting experience, bring to that table?
Nothing at all. But my view is that Harry, it will suddenly dawn on him in about 18 months' time, hang on, I feel as remote from all this as Meghan did inside the royal family. I've got to get back now into my environment where I feel most comfortable. He's then going to try and come back and you know, parley some other deal. Let me back in or half back in to find it's going to be very, very cold outside of the royal family when the door is locked and you can't get back in.
I think he'll wait until Her Majesty dies.
Yeah.
And his father is on the throne.
Yeah.
Because that will be a new phase. Yeah. We will have turned a corner.
Yeah, but Will will be very powerful then. And Will, I think of all people, is very hurt that Harry's done what he's done when actually they only had each other
massively
to get through
hurt.
Life after their mother's very tragic death.
But more to the point, what happens to Archie?
Yeah. Yeah, well no, you know, I totally agree.
If they break hardly up, Archie's going to stay in America, right?
Hardly anybody's even thought about that, and you're absolutely right. And, you know, the other thing I think about is nobody is actually asked how William and Kate are getting on in the wake of all this, because they've had to cope with all that as well, you know?
But they are bred royals. Kate's been on tour around the country visiting children and hospitals and schools and all that kind of thing.
Indeed.
With the big beaming smile. She's a professional royal.
Yes.
She's been coached very well.
Yes.
Now, why wasn't any of that coaching extended to Meghan?
Well, William did say, you know, when we read back on everything, to Harry, do you want to take a bit more time thinking about this before you take the jump? Anyway, look, there have been millions of words written about the royal family and even more millions spoken. So I tell you what I want to talk to you about is, for a lot of our lives, Leslie, and we worked in offices, OK? We don't so much anymore. We work in studios. You work at home or in an office writing great books. You go to publishing houses. And it's not the confines of an office as we used to know it. Now, I don't know about you, but I quite liked offices in the sense that it was a family atmosphere.
Office,
you know what I mean?
Culture. Yeah, we
office
got very culture. Close to people we worked with.
Yes, that's right. And to the habits as well. And, you know, there was definitely a sense of camaraderie in office. There was always a bastard or two there who was trying to stitch you up. But others would, you know, when you came staggering and pissed at 3:30 in the afternoon, hid you at the back of the room, you know, and when the news editor came round, pushed you under the table and all that kind of stuff, you know. There was all of that going on. However, apparently, the modern-day thinking about offices is that they're horrible places now, dens of iniquity, everybody's out to stitch you up. But more than that, they take a very heavy toll on your wallet. So, for instance, this is a report I found in one of my journals. If you work in an office, you've got to have a whole new wardrobe, haven't you?
Pretty much, yeah. And you can't rotate the clothes. You know, you've got to keep appearing in new stuff. You can't get away with wearing the same thing 3 days in a row.
Well, I'd never do that, but what I'm saying is
men can do it. Men can wear the same suit Monday to Friday and tie.
Funny enough, I always had 5 suits.
Did you?
Yes. And
all the same?
No. All different. So I wanted people to know that I had a variety of suits. So I'd have a grey double-breasted one, and next day I'd have a black one, next day royal blue one, all that kind of stuff, you know.
So were they like knickers, you know, with Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays?
Yeah, sort of, more or less.
Okay.
But of course, we used to work strange weeks. Sometimes I'd work Sunday right the way through to Friday. That would put out my suit rotor, didn't know what to do next, so I have to go and get a new suit. I mean, I had more than 5 suits.
But did you clean them in between?
Or absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you had to, because in those days you spilled an awful lot of drink on your clothes.
Oh, yeah, and the smoking in the office.
Smoking in the office,
well.
All that bollocks. And
curry. curries.
Curries in
late night sex, all of that.
All that kind of stuff. Yeah. And falling over in the street, of course, was a regular
muddy
occurrence.
Muddy knees, not a good look.
Yeah, muddy knees. That wasn't just falling over, of course. That was the behavioural attitude of a late night drunk looking for sex.
And not used, to put too fine a
yes,
point
on it. Exactly. Yes, I'm not.
Speak for yourself.
But also, there's this thing about... the Office Collection. Now, I used to hate the Office Collection.
Uh-huh.
And my instinct was always, no, get lost. I'm not giving any money to that person.
That
I don't
bastard.
Like that person.
Never
that
liked
bastard.
Him in the first place.
No, exactly. You know, like him or her, or I don't even know them.
But then you'd be frowned upon.
Well, exactly.
And ostracised
exactly.
for not giving anything.
Exactly. So,
but
yeah.
nowadays it's easier because nobody carries cash.
That's
so unless
right.
they've got a cash machine.
Yeah.
Or a cash a card machine.
Yes.
You know, surely the Office Collection has died out because of that.
Yeah, well, maybe it has, Now, the other one, of course, is the Will You Sponsor Me one.
Oh, yeah.
And this is very expensive.
Surely that's died out now.
Apparently not. Apparently now it's all online, you see. Everybody's got a screen in front of them.
Oh, a Just Giving account and all that.
It's something like that, yeah. Oh, I'm going to climb Kilimanjaro. It's for disabled soldiers. And, of course, you can't say no. Because
so they're going on holiday and they're asking you to pay for the flight, basically.
That's right, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So then the old, they say, oh, I'll send you the link. So you get the link and then, what's it called? Just Giving. And you think, I don't really want to give to this.
Yeah.
Because, I like disabled soldiers, but I live down on the coast and I give money to guys who collect money for the Royal British Legion and all this kind of stuff, So I don't do it. And then... the drink after work. Now, if you're like me and you have an absolute inherent fear of being looked at as being mean and not buying your round.
Mm-hmm.
So you're either first or second in. And, like I do, there's a dozen people in the pub that night and you get everybody out, what do you want?
And
they'll
all go after the first round. Yeah.
And particularly if you're the boss, you've got to be seen to be leading from the front, because they think you've got a lot more money than them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not always true. I mean, you might have more money than them, but you have a lifestyle which is superior to theirs and you spend a lot more of it, you know what I mean?
No, it's all relative.
Yeah, it's all relative. So that costs you a lot of money as well because you're saying, I'll get drinks in. And then there's always the embarrassing moment when somebody... who is a minnow, says, OK, so whose round is it? And you're left in this embarrassing vacuum where nobody will speak up. And again, you step forward and say, excuse me, it's the air conditioning in here. Oh, I'll get them. Don't worry, And once again, you're caught in that trap.
It's quite embarrassing, isn't it? The whole culture of going up to the bar and buying a drink.
Yes.
And of course, people can't just come in and go up and buy their own without looking around and saying, who'd like a drink?
No.
It's very awkward.
I
don't know what the answer is to that.
One thing I really hate is, and I've seen this happen sometimes, younger people now these days don't know what buying a round is. And I've actually seen, a group of, half a dozen snowflakes come into a pub and they've just beaten me to the bar, right? And I really want to get a drink and sit down in the corner with my journal or a newspaper or something like that, or I want to get on the phone and start, replying to some emails or something. And I'm left waiting there because each individual snowflake is buying
their own drink
or her each individual drink.
Yeah. Well, that's because they haven't got any money. They can't afford to buy a round.
Well, it's all on card these days.
Yeah.
So they should have said, who wants a drink? I'm in the chair, something like that. Of course, they might not stay for six drinks. We would have stayed for 12.
Exactly.
Exactly. So that does kind of irritate me to a very certain extent. But I do understand the world's
changing. I suppose the answer is to give up drinking.
Yeah, but I mean, I've moderated my drink enormously since I got the old diabetes too. And by the way, alcohol's not the worst thing that you can ingest. When you've got diabetes.
Heroin
too.
Is probably worse, yeah.
Oh, well, heroin is much worse, yeah. But what I'm saying is that the killer for diabetes 2, literally, is your weight, not necessarily your sugar. It's what you eat. And if you eat lots of food, even if there's not sugar in it, and you're putting weight on, tremendous stress on the vital organs,
liver,
kidney.
There's sugar in everything.
There is sugar.
So
sugar
alcohol,
in bread.
Alcohol converts to sugar?
Yeah.
Most carbs convert to sugar.
I got it wrong to start off with. I thought, right, so if I've got to give up sugar, I'll drink more pints and less wine because sugar is concentrated in red and white wine. Went to see the doctor after a month, He said, yeah, your results are pretty good. You're getting rid of diabetes well. Don't seem just to be losing that amount of weight you should lose, I said, well, you said I could still have a drink, Doc. He said, yeah, okay. Well, I said, you know, a couple of pints or something like that. I was lying. You should have about four or five, you know. And he said, no, have a couple of glasses of wine. And I said, but there's a concentration of sugar in wine, isn't there? He said, no. He said, that's a myth. He said, you're drinking vast quantities of alcohol when you're drinking pints of beer. Not that it's over strong, but it's the volume.
Mm-hmm.
And the volume is going to put weight on. You're not going to lose weight drinking beer. So I said, OK, so I changed
that. Hence the beer belly. You don't generally come across a wine belly, do you?
No, you don't. You don't. Well, you say that, but there's a chairman of a football club called Ken Bates, OK?
Oh, yeah.
And Ken's a great guy. You know, did you ever bump into
him? I have, yes.
I bet you have, yeah, of course you have, yeah. And Suzanne is his lady in life, you know, mm-hmm. and she had a bit of a cancer battle and got over that, fortunately. She's a lovely lady. And Ken never drinks anything except white wine, and he has put on. He's got a big beer belly.
You're better off with red wine if you want to control your weight.
I think you are. For all your
so champagne's not so good either. Although we are a bit champagne, Charlie, our generation.
Well, I'm not because I don't drink champagne because it does my heart in. But you know, that's not to say that people shouldn't concentrate on it.
What I think about champagne is never inappropriate.
Yes.
There's always a sense of occasion when you open a bottle of champagne. You know, Prosecco, Cava, all that kind of stuff is not the same.
Well, Prosecco, funny you should say that.
It's very, very sugary as well.
It is. But another one of my surveys shows that Prosecco is in fact going out of fashion because of, what's that, social media thing where you just take pictures of Instagram, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, now, the thing is you've got to get an exotic cocktail in your Instagram picture. Because Prosecco is right down the road,
I don't
want
a cocktail.
Sorry?
A gin and tonic is about as cocktail as I get.
Yeah, I like Harvey Wallbangers. And when I was about 19, I discovered Harvey Wallbangers. And for about a year or two, I just kept drinking them. Mm. It's like drinking orange juice.
Mm.
And then the orange started getting to me and I started turning orange, believe it or not.
Well,
yeah, the pigment of orange gets into your skin.
They're too sweet, aren't
they? Yeah,
really? Give me a bottle of gin.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I love starting the day. I don't mean starting the day at breakfast time, but if I know that I'm going to have an active day, I like starting my drinking day, right?
Bloody Mary.
No, with a gin and tonic.
Oh, gin tea, okay.
Yeah, love it, yeah.
I do like a good Bloody Mary now and again.
Yeah, Bloody Marys, that's okay with me. And the one I really like, and I can get carried away on it, is Southern Comfort.
Oh, yuck. That's disgusting.
Oh, at the end of a dinner or something like that.
I was in the Chester
Grosvenor a couple of months before Christmas,
that sounds
right?
like a name, Chester Grosvenor.
Chester Grosvenor. It's a brilliant hotel, which I've always tell people is the Dorchester of the North, OK? 5-star hotel in Chester City Centre, owned by the Duke of Westminster, the man who was the chairman of governors at my school, the King's School Chester. You know, eminent man, eminent establishment. And I entertained a couple of mates there who I'd worked with on Chester Chronicle. Johnny Richardson was one of them, who went on to have great careers in newspapers, as I did. We had a great night. And then when they'd gone, you know, there's that moment when your friends have gone, you think, oh, I'll just have another cocktail before I go to bed. I think I had about half a bottle of Southern Comfort. And it's one of those cocktails that is so nice, but not overly. I mean, for instance, I could not drink more than a couple of glasses of whiskey or brandy because of the burning effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact you know that you've drunk a very powerful
liquor,
yeah, absolutely right, you know, and all that kind of
it's
stuff.
It's nasty, though, Southern Comfort. I can't stomach it.
I like it, but anyway.
That and limoncello, ugh.
Oh, what's that?
Oh, it's a vile liqueur that's Italian.
Okay.
It tastes of lemons.
I haven't had one since because it just put me off. I did so badly that night.
Do you remember when the Russian and the American space modules linked up in space?
Yes, for the first time.
And they created a cocktail.
Did they?
That was called the Link Up.
Yes.
And it was like petrol. It was
really?
Two parts Southern Comfort to two parts Russian vodka.
Really?
I think it was Stoli they used.
Yeah.
And you had to knock that back in one.
Yeah, God.
Nah.
Yeah, no good.
I think I managed about half of one of those.
Yeah, well, that would have been me as well.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Right, OK, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Just been talking about cocktails. Now, rock stars, pop stars, Leslie Ann, you're the lady in the know. And I want to know, please, from you, what you think of the latest revelation that Ozzy Osbourne is now suffering from Parkinson's disease. Black Sabbath frontman, he's 71, lots of, you know, bleating and crying on TV. And some rather cruel comment on this on social media.
Desperately cruel.
From people saying, well, what do you expect, Ozzy? If you've been sticking cocaine up your nose for 40 years, you are bound to get a form of Parkinson's. What's your view on this? And I mean,
oh, my mate Danny Baker's in trouble again, isn't he, on this? He's
He the one who put out that tweet?
He's been outspoken.
Yeah.
Bless him. I love Danny.
Right.
I absolutely adore him.
Yeah.
But it's a silly thing to say. You don't get Parkinson's from overindulging in cocaine.
Well, it doesn't do you any good to...
it doesn't do you any good, but
yeah.
You are not going to develop Parkinson's disease.
Well, you don't know that, to be honest. Nobody knows.
The medical profession has come out and said that.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So what do you think of Ozzy Osbourne's lifestyle, then, all his years? It's been
obviously
pretty disgraceful, hasn't it?
As far as we read and as far as we know, and we know that everything's exaggerated, and we know that he also has taken his own lifestyle to the nth degree.
Yes.
You probably don't know that I was kidnapped by him once.
Well, you better tell us about that then.
Years ago,
yes.
He went a bit off the rails. I think it was in the 80s.
Yeah.
And
hang on, what's his most famous line? Had to finish with my woman because she couldn't read my mind. What was that called? Black Sabbath.
Anyway. He
heart attack
he
or
went
something.
A bit
yeah,
doolally and he went AWOL. He disappeared. He had all these little children at home at their house in Buckinghamshire.
Was he living
with Sharon
Osbourne?
Sharon!
Yeah. Have they been together all their married lives, so to speak?
Yeah.
So he didn't have a wife before him?
I think he may have had a wife before.
Yeah, I think he might
But
have
she
done,
was
yeah.
the daughter of his manager at the time, Don Odden.
Yeah.
The guy who infamously used to dangle Lindsay DePaul out of a window to get her to sign a contract.
Oh, yeah?
You know, there were all sorts Don Arden, who was
mafioso.
Yeah.
She was lovely, Lindsay DePaul. What a terrible tragedy.
Was.
She died young. What a terrible tragedy.
Yeah, that was very sad.
Wasn't she the girlfriend of Ringo Starr? James Coburn?
Yeah. She was an unhappy lady.
Yeah, but
difficult sort.
Was she?
Yeah.
But she was very talented.
Highly strong, and I think she stressed herself to death.
Oh, did yeah. I mean, she used to write songs, you know. Pardon me.
No, honestly.
Two, three. No, honestly.
She used to write with Barry Blue, who's
one
a mate
one,
of mine.
One and one, one and one makes three.
But she was a very, very highly strong
save
woman.
Save me, bum, bum, bum. Save me, bum, bum.
She hadn't had
save
a hit for a long, long time.
Baby, hey.
But she'd made a lot of money and she had a gorgeous house. But we digress.
Where'd she live?
Lindsay DePaul in Highgate.
Hampstead, Highgate. So you knew quite well, did you?
Yes, and I remember being at the Gold Badge Awards with her.
Oh, yes.
In 2010.
Was she tiny physically?
Very, very small.
Yes, yes, yes.
Very pretty woman.
But yeah, that's right.
How did we get from Ozzy Osbourne?
Well, anyway, come on. Ozzy Osbourne kidnapped you.
So Ozzy Osbourne did. He went off the rails.
Mm.
He cut off his hair and sent it home to Sharon in a shoebox.
Why?
No one knows.
No, right. Yeah.
Sorry,
it's the air conditioning. Yeah, go on, yeah.
And I was dispatched to find him. Which wasn't all that hard because he was in his house in Los Angeles.
Right.
And
where were you? In Los Angeles?
Yeah, because that's the obvious place where you go and live.
You're living with Raquel Welch at the time, by any chance?
No, I was in the office in the Daily Mail. And so off I went. Ended up going out to dinner with him and Rod Stewart.
I'm sure
I've told you about this before.
No, I don't think you have.
And it was, we were in Metzaluna, which is that place where O.J. Simpson was arrested.
Oh, yes.
And Ozzy came up with the idea that we had to pay $1 for every item of clothing we had on to go into the restaurant.
Right.
So, of course, we ended up wearing tablecloths and all the rest of it with roses in our mouths under the table.
Yeah, yeah.
It was complete debauchery.
As you would,
And then they kidnapped me. They didn't let me go back to my hotel. And
where did they take you?
To the den of Ozzy's house.
Oh, blimey.
Where they kept me for about 5 days.
For 5 days?
And where Ozzy cooked me lobster.
Well, hang on. What happened in these 5 days?
Well, not a
lot. A very convenient cough there. Don't ask that question.
The world wondered where I'd gone.
Yeah, but I mean, what was going on inside the den?
Well, nothing.
So there's stunningly attractive young showbiz reporter with two of the world's most famous rock stars of the day. What are you doing, playing Monopoly?
They taught me how to play pool. They thought it was funny. They had a cob on, as they used to say, with Her Britannic Majesty's press corps.
Right.
You know, they've run the gauntlet. This has gone on far too long. We're going to take a hostage.
You were communicating with your office, presumably.
No. I was off radar. Nobody knew where I was.
Well, wasn't there a massive national panic going on?
The days before mobile phones and the internet and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, there was a panic. Mm. They somehow managed to keep it from my mother.
Yeah, but, he would have gone mad, I'm sure. Yeah,
yeah, I wrote about this in Tumbling Dice,
right,
in my memoir. Yeah.
Okay. You know, once again, another great adventure of yours on the on the Fleet Street Road. Now, talking about all that, right, tell me why a bunch of dancers in South Korea are the most famous band in the world, this is stats I'm getting here, since the Beatles.
The Bangtan
Boys. I've never bloody heard of them.
BTS.
Eh?
Well, because you're the wrong age group, Mike, and you're not into electronic dance music.
You're absolutely right. For those unfamiliar, these young men are members of... Oh, excuse me, this is getting bad. BTS, a South Korean pop group who sold out Wembley Stadium last summer,
I didn't notice,
and became the first band since the Beatles to have 3 number one albums on the Billboard 200 charts in less than a year.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what do they sound like?
Something like 16 million albums on their first outing.
They just look like a bunch of kids, dancers.
Well, that's what our parents said about the Beatles, of course, and the Rolling Stones and everybody else.
No, at least the Beatles held guitars.
Well, yeah.
Except for the one guy, of course, at Decca, who said, no, guitar groups are going out of fashion.
Out of fashion,
we're not
going
to sign them.
But they are the latest young thing. They have had massive influence on other groups and artists of their genre.
Yeah.
I don't think in 40 years' time we're going to be talking about BTS. But what you've got to remember is
I'm not even talking about them now.
No, but in Asia, they get a massive following because of numerically. It's very simple. This happens quite a lot, that artists in the Asian territories become massively famous, but they generally don't expand outwards. They don't cross over.
Yeah.
I can remember a Japanese artist in the 80s called Minako Honda. You've never heard of her, have you?
No.
Brian May of Queen picked up on her.
Okay.
And he became her producer. And he tried to bring her to the West.
Right.
Because he was so impressed with her talent.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was bloody good.
Yeah, was she?
But she never translated to here. Mm. And I think what's different about these guys is that they have broken through.
Right.
It's come east to west for a change.
Yeah.
Because
the
Beatles are massive in Asia.
Yeah.
If you go to Tokyo,
you're
going to go out any night and have your choice of about 100 Beatles tribute acts to go and see.
Really?
Massive.
God,
but I don't think it's going to work in the other direction with these.
Well, apparently this lot now have, you know, gone beyond just being a group and culture. And all over Asia now, they have dance classes based on these guys' dance movements, you know, which have now been choreographed by professional dancers and said, you know, they've invented the new rumba or something like that.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Hugely popular. And the other thing, of course, is that the content of their songs, their lyrics, are honing in on things like mental health, teenage angst.
Yeah, but how boring is that?
The kind of troubles
you're talking about shagging and drinking
school kids are dealing with today.
Yeah, yeah.
They are addressing those topics in their songwriting.
Yeah.
And that's actually huge.
Yeah, well, you say that. Anyway, apparently...
It's true.
I'm sure it is true. It's now moved to London. A lady called Louise Kwan has founded Love K-Pop Dance London and now hosts 2 classes a week at the Bass Dance Studios in Vauxhall. I think I've recorded
there,
actually. Well, you won't get me in there. They are always oversubscribed. We have a capacity of 30 in the class, but there can sometimes be another 30 waiting outside to get in for the next class, she said. The crowd is mostly female, aged between 18 and 30, but we get all types of people. We've had students, lawyers. There was even a BBC journalist in our class.
Of course there was.
Wonder if that BBC journalist would ever... exactly.
It sounds to me like we should have a go.
Yeah, well, you won't get me.
But EDM is not your thing, Mike.
What's EDM?
It is electronic dance music.
No.
It's not your thing.
No.
Go home and listen to the Rolling Stones.
I am going to go home. Now I've got Spotify and I can listen to anything I want. I'm going to dredge up some records from years ago, which I haven't heard for such a long time. Do you know who I think were great, by the way? And I've always said this, and I've got their greatest hits album, so I play it sometimes on my old DVD. I love the Hollies.
Oh, yeah.
I think the Hollies are brilliant. You know, sometimes... All's I need is the air that I breathe and to love you. And the other one, of course, is He Ain't Heavy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's My Brother. But they did loads. I mean, they were serious ballads, but they did loads of. What's that one about a bloke meets a girl at a bus stop and they get married? I think it's called Bus Stop, you know. Bus stop, windy, it's still raining, da da da. And then, I know the line from that, you know. Sometimes she would shop and she would show me what she bought. I never thought I'd see her ever, you know, something like that.
Wonderful
again.
Songwriting.
And then and then it goes, you know, by autumn she was mine. So it's a very sort of, you know, basic love story. Oh, mm-hmm. Met this girl at the bus stop. You know, she started showing me what she'd bought in a clothes shop. I thought you're lovely. And by autumn, she was mine. And that's the sort of thing that used to happen in the 60s.
Innocent times.
That's the sort of thing
but
used to happen in
Alan
the 60s.
Clark is back out there, isn't he? He's having some sort of revival this year.
Is he?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Because also in the 60s, I mean, I never worked in the 60s. I didn't start working until the 70s. But older people, their ambition was to get a Ford Anglia.
My dad had a Ford Anglia.
Yeah, I'm sure he would have done. To buy a semi-detached house with a little garden in the front and to have two children, and you had them made it. You had made it. And that was, and a lot of pop groups in the 60s wrote about, in your semi-detached suburban, Mrs. Jones. You know what I mean? So because the world had crashed into pop stardom and all that kind of stuff, anybody who didn't join in was a semi-detached suburban Mrs. Jones who just went and got a little house. But people like security, don't they?
And do you think that that is making a comeback?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah. I think people want security, particularly as hardly
anybody...
Have we
done a full vault fast?
Well, hardly anybody can afford a house these
yesterday?
Days. I saw a piece, right, from a colleague that you may know, Melanie McDonough.
Oh, yeah.
You know Melanie?
Yeah. She hasn't ever bought a house.
You're absolutely right.
Renting a flat all her life.
Absolutely right.
And now she can't afford to rent anymore.
I remember the bit here. I've got it here. She scoffed at a friend's obsession with property, but now with her teenager sleeping in bunk beds and prices far beyond her reach, Melanie McDonough laments on the curse of renting in my 50s.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I mean, we've always been a nation who liked owning our own homes, but it has changed over the last few years. But it changed not because of the change of culture, it's because nobody could afford to buy one anymore.
I think... And
especially young people.
It's a worry because it's all right while people are earning and they can pay the rent.
Yep.
Nobody's got pensions anymore.
No.
Nobody's got money to look forward to.
No.
So what happens when they can no longer work? And they can't meet
can't pay the rent? I totally agree.
What are we going to do with those millions of people?
I am so lucky that I've got more than one roof over my head.
Touch wood.
It's all paid for. And frankly, it makes a hell of a difference to your life. I mean, you'd pay service charges in the sort of blocks I live in, which is like a second mortgage, really. But imagine having a mortgage to pay on top of that. You know what I mean? And you are sorry. Look, I've got a mate who is married second time, right? Lost almost everything in the divorce from the first time round, never able to get the money back together again to buy another place, has to have two homes because the mother of his children wants to live down in the country because she's got a little business and she loves the local schools that her sons go to, you know. He's got to have a place in London as well. He has to rent two properties. He's never been able to get the money together again to buy again. And he's on his second marriage. He's coming up to 60 with teenage children. He's going to have to work another 10 or 15 years just to put a roof over his family's head and get those kids through university.
And if the work is there,
and
because
if
work is tailing off for
the
people
work won't
in
be
their
there. 60s. The work won't be there. You know, the media industry is expanding in some areas, but in the core areas that you and I came up in newspapers and in commercial radio and that, it is consolidating, believe me. And although there are areas that are expanding, they're at the start of the career life, if you see what I mean. You've got to be fast on your feet electronically. You know, you've got to know how to run a desk, a laptop and all that kind of stuff. And they're skills which are lost to the older generation quite often. or you just won't be considered for those jobs. So it is very worrying times, I agree. Now, just before we finish, I want to ask you this, please, Leslie-Ann. It's one of my big bugbears. Wind farms paid £3 million a day to stop generating any electricity. Wind farms were paid up to £3 million per day to switch off their turbines and not produce electricity 10 days ago. This is because energy firms were handed more than £12 million in compensation following a fault with a major power line carrying the electricity to England from turbines in Scotland. When it couldn't be stored, they were told to switch off the generators and they were paid millions in compensation. This happens all the time with wind power. When the wind isn't blowing and the blades are not turning, the people who own them still get paid because
it's nonsense.
Because
isn't it?
they've had millions paid in subsidies to build the blinking things. It puts all our electricity and gas prices up because in the end the taxpayer pays billions to build these monstrosities across our nation.
Well, doesn't it show that wind farms are not ultimately viable?
Of course they're not viable. They're just pathetic. And people who have got no common sense, you know, so make the air cleaner and all that. Well, go and tell that to China, who are building a new power station once a month, OK? And they, what China are, they're practical. They say, well, hang on, Australia has got trillions of tonnes of coal and it's only across the sea, so we buy it all there and we buy all our zinc there and we buy all our metals there to make iron and steel and they ship it over here and then we build it and it's great. Well, it is great.
And Australia is on fire, of course.
Well, Australia's not on fire because of anything they've done wrong with mining.
The coal industry has.
Coal's not on fire. The trees are on fire because Australia's a very hot country. And a very hot country always bursts into flames, like California does, on a regular basis, doesn't it? But you've been there when you've, you know, heard about the California fires.
Never got scorched.
Sorry?
Never got scorched.
But, you know, people say, California's such a great place. I don't care if it goes on fire every summer. I'm staying there. Leslie-Ann, once again, thank you very much indeed for joining me. How can people get hold of you?
Oh, on Twitter at LAJ Writer.
That's right. And you get hold of me, Mike Parry 8, or contact us on the Gmail, which is planetporkypod@gmail.com.
Hooray!
Got that right, first time.
Boom, boom.
And folks, thank you very much indeed. Let us know what you're thinking about these podcasts, and we will be back with you again very soon.
Came up with the idea that we had to pay a dollar for every item of clothing we had on,
right,
to go into the restaurant.
Right.
So of course we ended up wearing tablecloths and all the rest of it, with roses in our mouths under the table. It was complete debauchery.
As you would,
And then they kidnapped me. They didn't let me go back to my hotel. And
where did they take you?
To the den of Ozzy's house.
Oh, blimey.
Where they kept me for about 5 days.
For 5 days?
And where Ozzy cooked me lobster.
Well, hang on, what happened in these 5 days?
Well, not a lot.
You had a very convenient cough there. You asked that question.
The world wondered where I'd gone.
Yeah, but I mean, what was going on inside the den?
Well, nothing.
So there's
you know,
stunningly attractive young showbiz reporter with two of the world's most famous rock stars of the day. What are you doing, playing Monopoly?
They taught me how to play pool.
I don't know about you, but I quite liked offices in the sense that it was a family atmosphere.
Office,
you know,
culture.
Yeah,
we
office
got very
culture.
Close to people we worked
with. Yes,
we?
That's right. And to the habits as well. And, you know, there was definitely a sense of camaraderie in office. There was always a bastard or two there who was trying to stitch you up. But others would, you know, when you came staggering and pissed at 3:30 in the afternoon, hid you at the back of the room, you know, and when the news editor came round, pushed you under the table and all that kind of stuff. What's that one about a bloke meets a girl at a bus stop and they get married? I think it's called Bus Stop.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.